I hope you're as excited about doing this derby again as I am. That was a fun morning, fun day last year. We had about 75 people here, 18 kids, 30 cars went into the race. We'll see what we can do. Many of you may be unaware of the drama that went on here yesterday. George came up to the building to do something yesterday and found out we were among those that were without power. And so Mike called it in and they said, we'll get to work on that and you'll have power restored Monday morning. And so we're trying to figure out what to do this morning. I was saying, let's just do it. We'll do it with the lights off. We'll do church lights off, no problem. We didn't have to worry about that. Well, they got it fixed. So we get to talk about Leviticus now. Good news, right? I went back and forth on what to do with this lesson and with the last few weeks of our Bible reading plan. As we mentioned in our classes, the Tuesday class had been doing Leviticus for about 4 weeks, and the Wednesday class doing Numbers. And it's a couple of books that we are often very, at least willing, if not eager, to skip over as we're reading through the Old Testament. And even I admitted when we came to the end of the classes this week that it's good to read everything in the Bible. Read through everything and make sure we're not neglecting everything. But there are certain books that we put on the list to read regularly, and there are those to put on the list to make sure that we're reading sometimes. And Leviticus and Numbers probably fall in that sometime. It was suggested, since we'd just gone over the year of Jubilee every 50 years for the Israelites, it was suggested in class on Wednesday that maybe they are every 50 years books. That might be too extreme, but I understand where it was coming from. It's tough going through these books because it feels somewhat foreign. It feels very hard to understand how it would apply. I think particularly Leviticus. As we look at it, and it seems to be such a dense book of rituals and instructions, and we find ourselves asking, why, as New Testament Christians, are we worrying about instructions for old covenant sacrifices? Why are we worried about these things from so long ago? And it feels like, it feels sometimes like if we're going to be studying in our Bible, that the time might be better spent elsewhere. And have you had that feeling? Anybody confess to that? I'm an Old Testament guy, and I've taught college class on Pentateuch, and I enjoy being in these books sometimes, and still I have had that feeling at times when we're going through. I said, I feel like maybe we could have something that feels more applicable. So maybe this morning we can come up with something that we can hold on to. Maybe we can come up with something to say, hey, that this is time well spent, and I'm glad we took at least one sermon on these books. Or maybe we'll come out of here saying, well, we let Jesus have his time, and maybe he'll move on to something else. Like that quote from Henry Emerson Fosdick in the bulletin there. I forgot to grab a bulletin copy to get the exact quote. It says, only the preacher is delusioned enough to think that people come to church on Sunday excited to find out what happened to the Jebusites. So, if we come out at the end of this morning and say that you should have remembered what Mr. Fosdick said, I'm fine with that. Let me know that you missed the mark. And say, well, I'll try again next week on something else. Fair? All right, here we go. A way through the noise in the book of Leviticus. It does seem very dense on the face of it, like you said. There does seem to be a lot of it that would just say, why would I bother with this? But I think if we remove some of the things that even in its original writing weren't intended for everybody anyway, we might get a little clarity. All right. Let me be clear, this is not me saying to remove anything from the book of Leviticus. This is me trying to point out there are sections that, even when they're originally written, were not intended for everyone, even at the time. Okay? At least not intended as instruction for everyone. Because when we see we have 27 chapters of things you have to do for God, it seems like a lot. When somebody throws out the number of in the Old Testament, there's not 10 commandments, there's 613 that have been counted up, and several of them are here. It makes it feel like that at that time, being one of God's people must have just seemed like such an incredible chore, that there's always something you have to be doing. Have you been in those Bible classes where we talk about the old Jewish laws just made it a chore? In there? Okay. Maybe I've taught that class. I don't know. But some of these weren't intended to be chores for everyone. So let's remove from this list, not trying to cut anything out, some of these things. Some chapters in Leviticus are narrative. It's not telling you things you have to do. It's telling you about things that happened. So we can cut out the narrative as some of that noise when it comes down to what God's people are supposed to take from Leviticus. All right, that was easy. That was painless. What else do we have? Other sections are instructions only for not even all the Levites, but for the sons of Aaron, the priests. So you have the 12 tribes, narrow it down just to one, and then narrow it down to about a third of them, and even a little smaller on that, instructions for what they're supposed to do when the people bring them sacrifices, or the processes of how these priests are supposed to take care of things. This was not intended for everybody. It was specific for Levites. So that cuts out a few more. All right. I don't see anybody in here that needs to worry about, you know, being a priest in the line of Aaron and how to properly scrub down a sacrifice. If that does apply to you, let me know. I'll put it back up. But we probably don't need it. Another group of chapters that weren't intended to be for everyone is a section that we call casuistic laws, or case by case, as opposed to apodictic laws that would apply to everybody at all times, essentially. So these are the very specific cases of if you have this situation going on, then you need to do this. So if you need the two chapters on various types of skin diseases, there may be some time that you say, well, I've got something going on here, I can check it out. There may be a time that you need to worry about things like skin diseases and stuff like that. But even at the time, this was not a general, you don't need to worry every day of your life, what do I need to do with each of these specific skin conditions? All right, you with me? That these laws were not everyday, everybody things. This was not something that would have been taking your time trying to figure out how can I possibly keep up with all these things God wants. It's not these chapters. Okay, so we keep going. I'm going to remove one more. I went back and forth on whether or not to take this out, but I decided to. Chapter 26 does not give new instructions, but it says, here are the blessings for keeping the commandments. And curses sounds bad. The problems. Problems for if you don't keep the laws. So it's not introducing something new you have to do. It's an imprecisely placed square, white square on there. So 26 is out. So we've gone from 27 chapters down to 11. So clearly there are things that needed to be done. But maybe there's a little less noise going on. Maybe a little less of this, of the feeling of, well, I always have to be doing something for God. So let's look at what's going on in these remaining 11 chapters briefly, I promise. Some of these things that remain, the things that the people are told, you need to care about this, everyone, pretty much all the time. These things, I think, give a picture of the things that God cares about and the things that God's people are supposed to care about. Chapters 4 and 5. I almost took these out with chapters 1 through 3. But there is, in addition to being instructions about sacrifices, they are instructions about sacrifices like 1 through 3, but in, where 1 through 3 is telling the priests when they bring the sacrifices, this is what you do with them, these actually talk about why the people bring the sacrifices. All right, these are the sin offerings and the guilt offerings. And it says, these are not just when you've done something wrong, kill something. Like sometimes we paint the image of sacrifices. This says, if you have sinned against someone, even accidentally, much of it talks about accidentally sinning against somebody. There are things like if your animal kills somebody else's animal. And again, I debated on these few chapters. They could have been knocked out with some of the casuistic stuff. They could have been knocked out with some of the sacrifice stuff. But I think it's worth pointing out, these chapters don't just talk about killing animals and bloodshed and what we think about with sacrifices. That's certainly a level of noise that we could talk about in Leviticus. In our Tuesday class, when we were going through some of this stuff, we said that the duties of the priests in Leviticus look less like a church building or a temple, and look more like the back room at the country smokehouse, right? Because of all this stuff, and it must have been quite a scene. But it says offering a sacrifice when you sin against someone or have harmed somebody. It says you give your sacrifice and you pay retribution. You make it right. If you're going through your lives, if you do something that harms someone, that's the sin offering, or the guilt offering is if you've done something that causes damage or a problem for God's things, you make it right. That is one of the things that you need to be doing. All right. So that's what's going on in 4 and 5. I meant to put a block on 6 because it has more of the stuff just for priests. Chapter 7 and chapter 17 talk about not eating blood, which is, almost lunchtime, but I don't want to talk about this sort of thing. But it talks about not just this is gross. This is saying blood is the life of an animal. Right? Life is in the blood. And so when you are preparing an animal to eat, you drain it out. Seems strange to say a show of respect for the life of the animal that you just killed and are preparing to eat, but there's that level of respect for the life that God put into this animal. Chapter 11 is strange. Chapter 11 is the food laws. I don't have a really good explanation for the food laws, But it is something that is supposed to be an everyday and everyone thing. There are a lot of explanations that get put out there for why eat these things and not eat these things. Some have suggested health concerns. Some have suggested might have to do with you being seen as separate from some other nation that might have might eat these things. I'm going to give it a shrug and say there are some things in Leviticus where the reason for it is stated, do this. Why? Because I am the Lord your God. Which isn't just a because I said so, but is, you know, this reveals something about God's character. And I'm going to take a pass on food laws. I was going to do a sermon on it a couple weeks ago, but then we had the ice storm, and I decided, let's just move on. So, we had laws about making things right when you harm others. We have properly eating or avoiding eating certain things. Chapter 18 is the chapter for making your inner junior high student giggle, because that's all the different people you're not supposed to sleep with. We don't need to spend much time on that, other than saying that this is not... again, this is not just talking about... let me back up. I was going to say something... just set that up. When it gives this whole list of these are the people that you are not supposed to sleep with, several of them, there's a statement in there, like, do not sleep with your... do not dishonor your father's brother by approaching his wife to have sexual relations. She is your aunt. And some of those statements in there about the relationships, on one level, make it sound like gross. They're related to you. But on the other hand, this is showing, I think, it's saying take a moment to think about showing respect and not dishonoring someone in your family, someone you should be showing respect for. I think this list is about recognizing the humanity in others rather than seeing as objects. But we don't want to dig in to Leviticus 18 for too long, so we're going to move on. Deal? Yeah. All right. There was enthusiasm there. I'm going to come back to chapter 19. I want to spend a little time on that. I shouldn't have taken out 16. I was sloppy putting this together. I will confess. I thought we weren't going to have power. Got a message that we had power. I thought, well, I should throw together a slide. And clearly it was thrown together. I apologize. So, chapters 16, 23, and 25, I'm also going to come back to. Chapter 27 is about vows and dedications you make to God. Not necessarily saying you must make these vows and dedications, but when you do, this is what it's supposed to look like. All right. So we've had a number of these chapters that are for everyone for all the time, that are about showing respect to others, that are about maybe with the food laws, about being intentional about the things that you eat. We have the proper way to make a vow or dedicate something to God. In chapter 19, we have a section that's known as the Holiness Code. This is a chapter that is sort of unique in Leviticus, and it's most people's favorite because it's a little more accessible. It starts off by saying, "Speak to the entire assembly of Israel and say to them, 'Be holy because I, the Lord your God, am holy. And then it lists rapid fire, several of these commandments. A lot of them sound very familiar from other commandments we've looked at. Each of you must respect his father and mother, and you must observe my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. Do not turn to idols or make gods of cast metal for yourself. I am the Lord your God. We have repetition of nearly all of the Ten Commandments in this section. But then we have other things in here that you might not expect as being a law. You have things like when you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor, the alien, and the orphan. I am the Lord your God. You have statements like, do not hold back the wages of a hired man overnight. Or do not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind. But fear your God. I am the Lord. You have statements that aren't about statements and laws and commands that are not about something extra that you have to do because God said so. But these are laws about showing that your neighbor has value. These are laws about trying to help God's people to look at others the way God looks at his people. These are places where God is trying to create a community that has the same values that God has. So, what are you supposed to value? Getting every last piece of edible or sellable crop from your field or your vineyard? Or making sure that somebody that doesn't have their own land, doesn't have their own access to their food, leaving that for them. It says, don't do the corners. Don't go over a second time. Don't shake the branches a second time. Leave some behind because your neighbor or somebody passing through, somebody created by your same creator, may need that more than you need a little extra profit. Somebody is working for you, you pay them on time. That's not really an extra command of something you have to do. That's something you should already be doing. It says, if somebody makes a pledge to you, said, I will repay this, and somebody says, I owe you $500, and I'm going to pay you back, and I'm going to give you my coat until I can pay you back that money. It says, okay, you take the pledge. If it gets cold at night, give them their coat back. It's cold. They need that more than you need that to hold that over them. Get it back from them in the morning. You know, these sorts of things says that your neighbor, who God created, just like he created you, matters more than your money. Matters more than your pride. It says these are the things that God's people are supposed to be about. And so many of these things aren't about doing extra things. It's about not doing the things that are going to get in the way of the well-being of God's people. Can you really say that not harvesting your field a second time is an additional commandment of something you have to do? No, it's a chore off your list, right? You don't have to do that a second time. It's hard to say some of these things. Don't put a stumbling block in front of a blind person or curse a deaf person behind their back. That's not something additional we have to do. That's just saying, don't go out of your way to be cruel. That's not how God sees people. That's not how you're supposed to see people. So that's the holiness code. The last three chapters we have here are holidays. In chapter 16, which should not be blacked out, I've apologized for that. Leave me alone about that. Chapter 16 talks about the Day of Atonement. When the community has to make their relationship right with God. So it talks about having two sacrifices that day. Well, two animals. One that is sacrificed on the altar, and one that is let go into the wilderness. And the one is for the purification of the tabernacle, and the other is to carry away the sins of the people. You may have heard of the scapegoat. That's this goat that is set free to go into the wilderness and carry away the sins. And then in chapter 23, you have a kind of a rapid-fire list of all of these holidays that they're supposed to be keeping, starting with the Sabbath, right, once a week. And then you have Passover and First Fruits and Pentecost, Feast of Trumpets, Feast of Tabernacles. One thing that I was noticing as we're going through these when you think of the holiday times, how many of you think of it as, oh good, a time of rest? Maybe it's different in your house than mine, but it seems like the busiest times of preparing and always going someplace and having family around, which I just said as though it sounds like a bad thing, but it's not a bad thing, but it's a busy thing, right? If you look through these lists of holidays and festivals in chapter 23, these are not presented as things that you need to be doing extra busy. In fact, each of these say, don't do work. It starts with the first one listed is the Sabbath. And you're probably most familiar with the Sabbath out of all of these, where they were told, the seventh day of the week, you rest. Exodus says you rest because God rested, right? And if God's people are supposed to emulate God as best we can, well, if God rested, we rest. Deuteronomy, when it tells the Ten Commandments and it says to rest, it says rest because you were slaves in Egypt and God brought you out. You worked hard all the time. Now you need to recognize there's a time for taking rest. And anyone working for you deserves that rest because you were brought out of slavery. There have been so many reasons suggested for why the Sabbath is important, not just what Exodus and Deuteronomy say. It's suggested that we need that natural rhythm of life, right? That if we just go and go and go, that's not what is healthy for us. And in fact, we see that idea here in Leviticus when it says in chapter 25, the land needs a rest too. It says, you plant your fields and you harvest them, for 6 years, and the seventh year, you don't plant it, you just harvest. You let the land have its Sabbath. The land needs its rest. Um, And Leviticus ties the ideas of God's people and the land together so often. And so I think what I see in this emphasis on Sabbath is that in the middle of all of this noise, of all this stuff that it seems like is just instruction after instruction, and how do I keep up? A lot of what Leviticus has to say is in the middle of all of this, you slow down and you focus on what's most important. The laws in Leviticus, at least the ones that were intended for everyone at all times, most of these boil down to show the value, recognize the value in God's people, and the others are about don't put up boundaries between you and God. But if the big idea in Leviticus is holiness, like last week I said this sermon was going to be called Holy, 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 because I couldn't think of a better sermon title at the time, and Mike picked up a really good song for it, and then I changed the title. But if the idea is holiness, being set apart, holiness being the idea that you are somehow uniquely set apart in a way that you can be close to God, only things that are holy can be close to God, if that is what we are supposed to be about, then why would you do things to put boundaries in the way of doing that? Saying, why would you make your life be about work, where you never stop working and you don't allow yourself to focus on God? You talk about the year of Jubilee in chapter 25, which says after seven Sabbath years, the next year, so every 50 years, all land goes back to its original owner. He says, because you're not supposed to own the land permanently, because you don't own the land in the first place. God owns the land. He says, you don't let property ownership and possessions get in the way of your relationship with God. It's so easy when you start collecting things and trying to earn more and gain more. It's so easy to let that get in the way and you lose focus. And Leviticus says, don't do it. So much of Leviticus is saying, don't do these extra things. Don't create your own boundaries. Don't create your own laws in your life that are going to keep you away from God. Leviticus said, if you are respecting God's people, and if you are making time to deepen your relationship with your God, you're off to a good start. It's Leviticus where Jesus quotes from when he said, what's the greatest commandment? And of all of these commandments, we've even left 11 chapters of them up. Out of all of this, Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, all your strength. That's Deuteronomy. And the second, love your neighbor as yourself. That's Leviticus. So, you may come out of this morning saying, we let him have his time to talk about Leviticus, and maybe we get into something more interesting next week. And I'm sorry if this came out as one of those expository, here's what's in the text, and you look at me and say, so what do I do with this? I apologize for that. That happens sometimes, and I don't have a problem getting some friendly advice when that happens. But I hope that even if it's a while before you crack the book of Leviticus again, hopefully not 50 years, even if it's a while before you find any need to open there, you can take some of the heart of this message, where it's not about slaughtering animals, and it's not about plowing fields, and it's not about skin diseases, and all these things that we talk about. It's not about not eating bacon. But at its heart, I think this is saying, you show the value of those around you. You see people the way God sees them. And you get rid of that noise. You get rid of all those things that get in the way between you and God. So this morning, if you need to come forward and say, there's something about there's something about my life where I need help, where I need my relationships aren't right, things are going badly, I need God's people around me. Come tell us about that. We want to be able to help. If you need this morning to say, there has been so much noise keeping me away from God, there's been so many things that I've been putting up, so many boundaries, so many barriers, and I need to get rid of them. If you say, I need to knock down the barrier through baptism, which is get me close to God, start that relationship, start that journey, I need that. If you need that this morning, we'd be thrilled to help you with that. If there's anything you need this morning, let us know. This is family time, right? Let us know as we stand and sing.
We read about a place that's called hell.